Good evening, and welcome to Ketchikan's KRBD's second installment of Politics Now with your hosts, Kyle Johansson, former representative, Republican, and Bob Weinstein, former city mayor of Ketchikan, Democrat. I'm Deb Turnbull. I'm the button pusher. I'm also the rule maker. And this is a call-in show, so we want to remind you of those numbers, 225-9655, 1-800-557-5723 if you're on Prince of Wales Island. There are a couple of rules that I want to remind you about. Number one, no profanity. FCC would certainly frown on that. We know politics can be a heated subject. And the second rule is no name-calling, because it does not add anything to a civil discourse. And last but not least, the views and opinions expressed on this show are not the views and opinions of KRBD staff, the KRBD board of directors, and most of the KRBD membership.
Did you notice how clearly she stated that?
I bet between us, our views represent those of a lot of the KRBD management. But good evening, Deb. Good evening, Kyle. Look forward to tonight's discussion. Got a lot of potential subjects to get out there and discuss. Maybe get some call-ins.
Yeah.
Excellent. All right. Where shall we start? Well, where shall you start? I'm the button pusher.
I'm starting this time?
Go for it.
All right. You know what's been bouncing around town is selling of KPU assets. I'm not sure if they're selling the TV station or the telephone portion, but putting that on the market and selling it, they compete against GCI and all of that sort of stuff. It's been on the ballot, what, 15 years ago maybe? When was it, 20 years ago it was on the ballot? You were on the council, weren't you, or the mayor?
Right, I was on the council. I might have even been the mayor at the time, but around, 2000, 2004, sometime in that time frame.
There was a ballot issue, though.
Right. We had an offer of $30 million from PTI, and I led an unsuccessful effort to sell it. And there were two other provisions, one of which was on the ballot, and that was that the proceeds would go into a permanent fund, a KPU permanent fund. The proceeds, the earnings reserve, which could be used to supplement the potential lost income and make the water and electric divisions whole. Anyway, that lost by 65 votes. The council had also committed to, if it failed, to move ahead and modernize, including at that time the purchase of a $3 million switch. So that's some of the history, briefly.
Yeah, so over the years, some of the things that I've heard when I was in office, people would come and talk to me about it, and then I've kind of followed it in my other radio career. The issue of all of the investments in the infrastructure. So at that time, the decision was made to go forward. The people voted and said, yes, let's keep this. And along with that, you're kind of saying, I think that's what I remember, it was, okay, if we're going to do this, we're going to go all out and do it. We're going to compete. We're going to, if we're going to go, we're going to go all in. Is that kind of how it's been? Because there's been a lot of investment.
I think so. And, KPU did not have a television division, if you want to call it that, not division, but an arm of what was the telephone division. At the time, that was approved, and they've been competing. My understanding from talking with friends and others involved with KPU Telecom is that they've been competing quite well with GCI. GCI had come into the market. In fact, when they did, we were in court with GCI because of different legal disputes between the two parties. And I asked one of the GCI executives, why don't you just buy KPU? It's been for sale, and the response was, we don't do that. And what they did do at the time was they had, they used regulations to compete. And a good example, one of my favorites, and this, the numbers might be outdated, but if KPU puts up telephone poles or electric poles or whatever, it escapes me at this point if they're electric division poles that are leased by the telephone company for lines or vice versa. But the point is, they cost a lot of money. GCI, due to a regulation, only has to pay $20 per poll per year to use polls that were paid for by the ratepayers. So anyway.
Well, but I mean, how do you, I guess the problem people have talked to me about is how do you quantify, has anybody added up the amount of taxpayer money that we've paid and spent to buy all of these switches and all of these things to compete with GCI? How much that is worth, and if we do sell it, are we making money on the deal? Are we losing money? Are people going to lose their jobs? That's the other thing. It's like, and that's been the big critical portion, I think, part of when it was to be sold before, when the television part wasn't even part of it, when you were involved in city politics. The other portions that were sold, there were a lot of jobs that were associated, and people said, well, some people will get hired by whoever buys it, and some people won't. And so the people are going to lose their jobs, right?
Well, actually, in the proposed sale way back when, there was PTI had a 5-year job guarantee for people.
Okay.
Which, frankly, was more, the city had no job guarantee. I mean, people could think, well, we'll be here forever, and most of them probably
were. Is that pretty common, though? So would that come up in another deal?
I would
most
think,
likely?
Yeah. I mean, basically, and I've been out of the loop, and I know the council's had, from what I read in the paper and here in KRBD, that they're discussing potential sale. They've probably been approached by a buyer.
Right.
So, you know, if I were still involved in city government, I'd say, yeah, let's take a look at it. But first of all, employment will be an issue, as it should
sure.
be, and impact on rates. And finally, I can make a prediction pretty confidently. And Kyle, I would bet you a beer or a Coca-Cola or whatever your preference is, that the price that is being offered when a price is offered will mm-hmm. be less in dollars than the $30 million
yeah.
some years ago without even adjusting for inflation. So if you adjusted the 30, it would be, 50, 60 now. I bet it will, and I don't know because I don't know all the investments that have been made,
right.
That the price will be low.
Do you think anybody knows all the investments? Do you think any council members, do you think they have those numbers right in front of them?
Well, I believe the city finance director is Bob Newell, and I'm sure he can easily provide those numbers. They keep track of it.
I bet two people
they
know.
They have depreciation.
I bet Bob Newell knows, and I bet Carl Amelon
right.
knows.
Right. I'm sure
At least those two know what the number is.
Sure.
I wonder if anybody's ever asked them.
Sure.
Know.
They know. And, basically, KPU, especially the telecom division, because of competition, whereas water and electric don't have competition, needs to be run in a very business-like manner.
Right.
Businesses get bought and sold. So from that side of things, that makes some sense. However, what is being discussed, we'll find out eventually because even though they have authorization from an aging vote to sell, I'm sure that there would be a lot of public discussion. I'm sure KPU employees, I'm sure the IBW members of the public will weigh in on it, especially if there's an impact or a potential impact on rates in the other two divisions,
right.
or if it's just a bad business deal.
So let's say that most of the fears are put aside, and the union as a group is happy with the transition plan, and it gets good press, and everything happens, and it gets sold off. It's off. It's off the books, practically, because you're so familiar. I'm asking you because you're so familiar with the city budget. The very next fiscal year, the water and sewer are going to have to pay their own way. And now that's going to be a tough adjustment to the actual cost, because the other argument is that these things that we're selling off make money and cover losses in water and sewer, and that our water and sewer rates are going to go up. Would we pay more attention to water and sewer, or would we just have to pay what we are really supposed to be paying?
Well, first of all, I want to clarify, sewer is not involved.
Sewer's not involved?
For whatever reasons, always was, and still is, and probably always will be in general government instead of being part of...
But it's under the city roof.
Bigger utility, but...
Is it
one time, telecom in particular was...
Wait a minute.
Okay.
Is the sewer is taken care of under the same roof? It's in the city. It's run by the same people. It's just separately accounted for. Is that what you mean?
Yeah, KPU money would not subsidize the sewer division,
right.
whereas the council could. In fact, when I was involved in city government, telecom did provide, if you want, you know, some financial relief to the water division.
But
the water division was not self-supporting, although I understand it's either
okay.
is or
See,
has
this
become
is the
a
kind
lot
of
more
stuff.
Self-supporting. So this the question is, are the other two divisions self-supporting? And I think an important question is, were there to be a bona fide sale offer, what will the council do with the money? But the other, I just want to make one point because I forgot and I'll forget it again and then I'll be quiet for a second. You know, the question is, if KPU is going to be run as a business, and this is no reflection on the current council and mayor, in fact, you can put me in there.
I don't even know who the mayor is right now. Who is the mayor of the city?
Lou Williams III.
Oh, Lou, that's okay.
But, you know, they're the board of directors for a very important business. They also are involved with lots of other issues involving city government. They don't pay a lot of attention because of the demands of time in their own lives. They're not a typical board of directors,
sure.
although they're supposed to operate it in a business-like manner. So,
anyway. Well, I don't think anybody's being critical of the city council. It's a whole group effort. We're just trying to understand kind of what's going on here. But, I mean, and this is the part that really gets people frustrated is saying things like, okay, the city, we'll sell this off, and then we have water rates, and then sewer is separate, except the same people are managing both the water and the sewer.
Correct.
And the money's coming out of different pots. It's under the same roof. The exact same people are doing the same thing. They're making decisions out of this pot that affect decisions made of everything is completely interconnected, the budgets. It's a shell game inside there. And so can you transfer money from the general government of the city into the KPU Enterprise Fund?
KPU, as you said, is
they
could
do that, couldn't they? Couldn't they make an appropriation directly to the Enterprise
Fund? I'm not sure if they can. KPU money is supposed to be used for KPU.
They're the council. They can appropriate money into the fund, can't they?
In that sense, I'm fairly confident, with certain exceptions, they can't transfer money out of KPU for some general government purpose.
No, from general government into the KPU fund.
Well, I
think they can do that.
If they did that, it would mean city taxpayers and ratepayers would be supporting an area-wide enterprise fund. So
regardless of why, it could happen. Regardless of the motive.
All I know is in my 18 years in local government, that did not happen.
Okay.
So I would think it would be unlikely.
Phone's ringing.
All right. Yeah, the phone is ringing. But while the phone is ringing, do you feel like you've explored this enough?
I think it's pretty good. Well, I think it's an issue because a lot of people, you know, we've got a city council or city government that has a TV station. They run cell phones. They compete. They got a television station. Yep. They've got. I'm surprised they don't have a radio station by now. Do they have a radio station?
No. They.
Surprised.
Well,
they
as far as I
station.
Know, they don't.
And I hear they're opening a gym downtown. Just kidding. It's a joke.
We're looking at you like, what?
It's like
Gold's Gym.
What?
City.
Yeah.
City Ketchikan Gold's Gym.
Okay. Well, while we're waiting to find out who called in, shall we move along?
Yes. I'd like to bring up totally switch gears here. And I would like to talk about a leading presidential candidate on the Republican side, Donald Trump. So that's where I want to get to, if that's all right with Kyle. I mean, he's
absolutely,
you know, could be the standard bearer for your party here at the rate he's going. But when he made his announcement, he said the following about immigrants, Mexican immigrants, to be specific. When Mexico sends its people, they're not sending their best. They're not sending you. They're not sending you. They're sending people that have lots of problems, and they're bringing those problems with us. They're bringing drugs. They're bringing crime. They're rapists. And some, I assume, are good people. So after that happened, he was criticized heavily by a lot of people, including other presidential candidates like Hillary Clinton and Jeb Bush, I think. And
that's Jeb exclamation point, Bush.
And I think Mitt Romney condemned it. But others like Ted Cruz did not. And then so Donald sort of doubled down. You know, he basically said it's not just Hispanic immigrants. It's, you know, he didn't mean that Mexicans were particularly prone to rape and criminal activity. He meant to say that all the people crossing the southern border illegally, be they Mexicans or presumably nationals of the other countries in Central America, are potential rapists. And, you know, so today, well, number one, he's been going up in the polls ever since that time. And today, a poll in North Carolina said Donald Trump is the leading candidate in North Carolina. So my question is, since Fox News and CNN, I think, are basing their debates on the top 10 Republican candidates, do you think Donald Trump will be in the debate? And if so, should listeners invest in popcorn futures?
Well, certainly the earliest debates are always the best. When you've got 10 candidates on stage, you get the complete spectrum of the field. I think it's extremely interesting, the very first debates. I expect Donald Trump to be invited to there, to the first debate, certainly, along with some other wackos. Donald Trump is not going to be president. I'd like to see the demographics on this poll that you pull up saying that he's the leader in North Carolina. I mean, I don't know where they took that poll. Could have been anywhere.
And they took it in North Carolina.
Well, North Carolina is a big place, and whether you do it in the up in the coal country or you do it down in the coffee sipping centers down there, it makes a big difference. You know demographics. I mean, what's the difference between doing a poll in Ketchikan and doing one in downtown Juneau? Quite a bit of a difference, don't you think?
Well, my understanding, it's a legitimate poll, and
that's like saying downtown Juneau supports oil tax increases.
Right. Okay. The question is, if the election were held today, the primary North Carolina, Donald Trump could win the Republican primary.
He could, yeah, sure. I mean, you know, come on, it's early.
So do you think he has a chance of being the Republican nominee?
No, I don't think he has a chance. Here's a question for you. Can you name one other candidate for president besides Hillary Clinton in the Democrat primary?
Yes, Bernie Sanders.
Can you name two others?
Martin O'Malley, I believe, is running.
Martin O'Malley?
Yep.
What does Martin O'Malley do right now?
I don't think he's doing anything. He was the governor of Maryland until the last election. What is he doing now?
I don't know.
Well, what's Bernie Sanders doing now?
I don't know.
Bernie Sanders is getting the largest audiences for his political events. Huge.
Good.
To the point that the Clinton campaign has taken notice. And they're certainly concerned. And it's going to be a very interesting primary on the Democratic side.
Okay, we have a caller on line one. Caller, are you there?
I am.
Excellent. Ask your question, please.
Hi, Bob, Kyle. I just wanted to ask and get your opinion of the Washington Post story today about Alice Rogoff and what you thought about that. My impression is that I thought that it was great when the Dispatch and the ADN were in competition with one another, made for more journalism, more stories, more news. That's kind of been cut down since they merged. Was hoping to get your opinions.
Well, number one, I didn't read the story yet. I did see a headline flash by that it's a story on how this wealthy woman who's married to a D.C., Beltway billionaire type is active in Alaska, and that she bought the former Daily News and merged it, with the Alaska Dispatch.
Dispatch, yep.
Yeah. So that's all I know about the story. Hmm. And she has been active in Alaska. She wanted to own a newspaper, obviously. She can afford to buy one, and she did.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm kind of a conspiracy theorist when it comes to Alice. I met her a long time ago when she first came to Alaska, and she was trying to get money from the legislature to open an art gallery on New York City. She ended up kind of just flying into town, and everybody was kind of like, who is this lady? She just kind of showed up in Alaska. And it's just kind of, I don't know, if you look at her background, she's an amazing biography. And, of course, her husband, one of the founders of the largest capital investment firms in the world, she's a billionaire. And to me, it's a little bit, I have an uneasy feeling. It almost feels like Alaska's her hobby. It's no offense to her. She's a very nice, polite lady, and a very interesting person. But I don't know. I just kind of feel like I don't really want to be anybody's hobby. She could do anything in the world, and especially troublesome when the Dispatch now, if any newspaper on the East Coast, because of her connections in the newspaper business, long-standing, high-level connections in publishing back east. Now, when the East Coast wants a story about Alaska, they get the Dispatch story. They're basically writing their own stories. I mean, Alice Rogoff is an East Coast billionaire, and she is, it's an echo chamber. The East Coast, their story is Alice's story. She owns the voice of Alaska now, and it's troublesome. That's why this station is so fantastic. We can talk about whatever we want.
Well, the fact is newspapers are struggling as the media has changed to a lot of digital media and internet-based news. And, you know, Jeff Bezos, the owner of Amazon or whatever his title is, but he bought the Washington Post. So, you know, it's, you know, the billionaires who can afford to acquire a newspaper if they feel like it.
She literally walked into the Anchorage Daily News with a checkbook and wrote a $32 million check. I mean, the owners of the newspaper were just, they didn't expect it. They had no clue what was happening. It was unbelievable.
And I bet they were happy.
I bet they were happy. Sure they are. Now you look at, if you follow him on Twitter, he's fly fishing everywhere. But I mean, hello. Yeah, it's a little scary. I mean, I don't know. What do you think, caller? What's your take on the story?
My general opinion is that I liked it when there was the Dispatch and the ADN.
Yeah.
The Dispatch drove the ADN to be better after tough times hit it, and they had to cut back on staff a whole lot, which, you know, every newspaper had to deal with that. So the Dispatch drove them to be better, but definitely the merger of the two of them has cut off a lot of conduits for news in the state on the whole.
Yeah.
They might have more reporters now, but I don't feel like the state gets more stories.
Yeah, I agree. And now the Daily News Miner's for sale in Fairbanks.
Yeah.
So who knows who buys them, right?
Hey, maybe caller, you ought to call the Koch brothers, tell them, you know, that they could... There's a paper for sale, and maybe they can compete and give a different voice. And, you know, the Americans for Prosperity, for the Koch brothers and other one percenters can have their own voice. But I'm looking at the Washington Post story as I've been listening, and it's, you know, very interesting. And yeah, newspapers have been, the newspaper world has become less competitive. Look around, you know, the major cities where there used to be two or three papers, and now there's one and maybe a tabloid.
Well, Bob, if you have the Koch brothers' phone number, I'll take that off your hands for you, and I'll just I'll let you guys go. I'll publicly register one thing if I can, which is my my dislike of United States Senator Dan Sullivan. But that's a discussion for another day, I think.
Oh, there you go.
Have a good night, guys.
Thanks for calling.
Okay,
snuck that in there, didn't he? Yeah.
Thanks, caller.
All right, that's all right. That was a good question.
It was a good question.
That was sort of, I don't want to say out of left field or right field, but it wasn't something that we thought we'd get a call on, and it's of interest, obviously.
We do have a question about the first topic this evening, and Barry C. called in. And thoughts on KPU being run by city manager. How wise is that with also running city? Did KPU miss the boat or not getting into cell phones?
Well, let me comment on the first question, because I was involved when Tom Stevenson, or excuse me, John Magyar left. I think it was John left. He was the last so-called KPU manager. I promoted the notion of combining the two. And it makes a lot of sense. One has water, one has sewer. They have different pieces of equipment that literally...
I thought water and sewer were separate, though.
Right.
Shouldn't they have separate bosses?
General government has... Well, not if they have a backhoe and one.
So, ultimately, my point earlier when it said the same people are running both, you just told me now that the manager runs both divisions?
It makes sense from a management point of view to...
He just made my point.
Yeah. It makes sense from a management viewpoint in a viewpoint of efficiency to have one person overall to make sure that, as I said, there were times when, and I can't remember if it was KPU needed a city backhoe or a dump truck or vice versa, it wouldn't happen. And then sort of after the management change, it was not uncommon to see collaboration.
So he's in control of both budgets.
So what's that? Well, the manager, right.
Okay.
Yeah. So
okay. Sorry to interrupt. Go ahead.
And you know, there's a lot of reasons, personnel reasons. There's consistency in personnel. In theory, people doing similar work. And I realize there's a lot of positions that are dissimilar between the two should be compensated similarly, which was not always the case when you had two. I mean, you know, we had a KPU manager who went to a lot of used car auctions, and it was
that's right.
You know, was gone half the time. So, or
Carl's done a good job. I'm not
a substantial amount of time, and it was controversial with me and some other council members as to, you know, what the accountability should be. And we wanted to hold one person accountable to it. I'm a former school superintendent, and I think I may have approached it from, if you have a good principal, it doesn't make any difference how many schools you have, you hire another principal to run the school. Similarly, you have division heads and KPU, department heads, you know, in general government. And if you hire good people and let them run his or her divisions responsibly, one person can and I think should have overall responsibility. Not everybody agrees with that, but it makes sense to me.
And the second part of this question, did KPU miss the boat or not getting into cell phones?
Yes.
Oh, that was pretty succinct.
Wow, that I'm glad we're taping this. The one word answer. All
right, so we're gonna take a couple minute break here and go to some important messages, and we'll be back. But
okay,
Bob went. But late.
I will just okay. When we
clarify? No.
Well,
go ahead.
Say, my understanding is KPU is now in the cell phone business. Mm-hmm. They're aligned with Verizon, and they are involved. But
okay.
Yes.
All right. Thanks for calling, everyone. Don't go away. We'll be back in a few minutes.
While some people with high blood pressure have dull headaches or dizzy spells, most people with hypertension show no signs or symptoms. That's why it's so important to work with your doctor and monitor your blood pressure. Learn more at www.peacehealth.org/foryourhealth. Brought to you by Peace Health CMS Innovation Grant number 339066.
You're listening to KRBD Ketchikan at 105.3 MHz with translator K296CA Clover Pass, Pond Reef, and Ward Cove at 107.1 MHz, translator K214BD Point Higgins at 90.7 MHz, translator K211AT Mountain Point and Herring Cove at 90.1 MHz, translator K269BA Craig at 101.7 MHz, and translators K211AX Klawak, K211AU Thorn Bay, and K211AV Heidelberg, all at 90.1 MHz.
Due to budget cuts, we have had to make changes to programming on KRBD that will take effect on Monday, July 6th. Go to our website, www.krbd.org, and check out the new program schedule. Some programs have been moved for better transitions, and others have been replaced because the station can no longer afford to carry them. This is an opportunity to explore new and diverse programs. We hope you enjoy the new lineup. Thanks for your support.
It's an old-time square dance. On Friday, July 10th at 7 p.m. down at the Lumberjack Show Arena. Catch a cool evening breeze and do-si-do your partner. live music with the Free Radicals. All dances are taught, beginners are welcome. It's the most fun you can have standing up.
And we're back. And let me remind our listeners that the phone number here is 225-9655. And if you're on Prince of Wales Island, it's 1-800-557-5723. We decided we wanted to go back and talk about the presidential election. We seem so far from it, but of course, everybody's throwing their hat into the ring.
It's coming up. I just wanted to go back real quickly because I think it's a good segue into some really big news today out of Anchorage. But I wanted to just kind of clarify, do you really think that Donald Trump is a viable candidate, Bob? I mean, truly. Well, really? Seriously, come on. You know it's going to be Clinton Bush again, right? I mean, all of these side stories are just circuses, right?
You know?
Come on.
I think he's a viable candidate, and he has $9 billion, and he's proof of why Citizens United, even though this is not anonymous money, but it's if the billionaires can buy an election, you know, the Koch brothers and others are doing it, semi-secretly through some of the super PACs.
Citizens United now again? What does that have to do with it? Is it only companies or is it also unions, right?
Super PACs don't have to disclose.
Neither does the
AFL-CIO. So the point I'm making, Donald Trump is very wealthy. He's his own super PAC. And he can buy an election, and right. He might. He hired. He's fully staffed in New Hampshire. And do you know how he gets staffed in New Hampshire?
Limits.
He got staffed in New Hampshire by talking to the American for Prosperity staff, Koch brothers, and he hired all of them, or substantial amounts. So he's on the ground running in New Hampshire. He's leading in the polls in North Carolina. He has a 55% favorability rating in North Carolina.
According to this one poll, you can talk.
Well, it's a PPP
on
poll.
On a corner bar in Durham.
They're a PPP poll, you know, left-leaning, granted, but very reliable polling firm.
Reliably left?
Has a historically very good record and 55% favorability. So the question I would ask you, is there a connection between Donald Trump's racist remarks and his surging to the lead in a Southern state, Confederate flag, et cetera, et cetera? Or is it just just that he's running a lot of ads down there? Do you think?
He's probably just running a lot of ads. He's a pretty slick salesman. He's probably doing targeted ads and mailers. He might be going door to door knowing Donald Trump. I don't know how he's doing it. And I question your numbers. I have not validated those listeners that he's just talking about them.
Well, anybody
showed
can Google.
Me a headline.
All you have to do is Google North Carolina poll and Trump, and listeners can see that he is in the lead in a significant state in terms of Republican primaries.
What I saw was the Onion reported that he told Iowan farmers he could grow cows 500 times larger than they could. That's what I saw on the internet.
That's good.
It's true. It's on the Onion. That's part of my news. Okay, I'm just rolling along from there. You wanted to get back to the presidential. I just wanted to see if you really thought that he was a viable candidate, and obviously you're sticking to your guns. I think you really know it's going to be Hillary Clinton and a lot of jab exclamation points.
You know, a lot of people didn't think Bernie Sanders was a viable candidate. He is out there. He's touching a nerve, and not only among the left of the Democrats, but I think he's touching a nerve with some Tea Party types who have concerns about the government. And Bernie's a straight talker. And, you know, I think there's a growing movement in this country, and you can just look at what's happening in different states and cities, where there's a feeling that the income inequality gap, which has grown immensely in the last 20 years, that we have full-time workers who are on federal or state welfare assistance despite working full time. Bernie Sanders is the only candidate who's forcefully saying that's wrong.
Okay.
He's also saying Social Security. He I saw something that he did. I just want to touch on two things.
Are you working for Bernie Sanders?
No, I'm not working for Bernie
Sanders. Are you volunteering?
No, I'm going to help Donald Trump. I want Donald Trump to be the Republican nominee.
Yeah, he didn't bring Bernie up. You asked.
But I want to talk about
Social Security.
If somebody makes $30,000 or $50,000, they pay 6.2% of their salary to Social Security. If you're a millionaire, just $1 million, you make $1 million a year, not $100 million like Mitt Romney, but just $1 million. Because Social Security has an income cap, this year it's $118,500. A millionaire pays 0.7% of his or her income to Social Security, and a working stiff or a teacher or you or me, we pay 6.2% if we're covered by Social Security. Okay. That's what Bernie Sanders is talking about, and those issues are striking a nerve. He's having a huge turnout at his rallies, well beyond expectation.
Yeah. Good. Well, good for Bernie. That's good.
I can see we're going to have some really interesting conversations as we go along in this show as the election year really begins to heat up. So
it's going
to
be fun.
Okay. Now we know about what was his name?
All sorts of things. Holy smokes.
So you wanted to make a connection with some Alaska races
because
and primaries?
There was it's about presidential power. Now, I'm hearing on the radio, driving here, listening to KRBD, I've got Lisa Murkowski, Dan Sullivan, and Don Young, all criticizing the Army for making a strategic move. The only one I would imagine that has any credibility to say anything about a strategic Army move would be Dan Sullivan, because he's in the Army. Well, we got Don Young and Lisa Murkowski.
Dan Sullivan criticized his commander-in-chief?
I don't think he's active anymore. I don't know what he's doing. I don't know what they do there. But what I'm saying is it's always interesting to me. And, of course, it affects Alaska. What was it 2,500 people they're expecting to be laid off?
24 to 25.
2,600 at Jaber and Anchorage and 75 in Fairbanks.
Big impact to Anchorage.
Right. It's huge.
But
it's 30 or 40,000 nationally. It's
so
not just Anchorage.
So I'm curious, is this part of the surge drawback? Because I know I have a son in the military, and he's being pushed out after 15 years, six tours, because part of the surge. Is this part of that?
I don't even know what the
Senator
surge is.
Senator Murkowski was quoted in the Anchorage Dispatch.
Yes.
So, Alice Rogoff's newspaper. Something, and I don't have it in front of me, and I should if I'm going to say it, but basically saying that they had fixed a budget problem that might have led to reduction in numbers in the Army. Now, I don't know the details of the Army budget or the Pentagon budget, but the fact is Congress, and especially the Republicans, have asked for restraint in spending. It may be true.
No, that's not the point. My point is how does a U.S. senator somehow now have the ability to make strategic decisions, global defense decisions? Do they really get that sort of briefing? You work for a senator. Do they, in their U.S. Armed Forces, with Senator Begich on the Armed Forces?
He was for a
few years. Really get that much information that they're actually going to say, I don't think you should have troops over there. You got to move 2,000 troops. Alaska. Move them over to
They get information. I mean, the whole when they were going to redeploy some jet squadrons
they tell
from
them.
Fairbanks.
They don't ask them their opinion.
They do a lot of things. They hold nominations to get their attention. They do a lot of things. But the fact is...
Sure.
The fact is, it may be that Congress didn't say to the administration, you must reduce the force. But they did say, you will have less money. The whole sequestration thing.
Sure,
So you have an armed Department of Defense that's trying to not only have people, but equip them. And have new weapon systems
those are the same people who want budget restrictions, they're blaming, of course, our delegation blamed Obama. But who should be dealing with it? Who should be figuring this out? The experts, the people in the Army who decide where to deploy troops, are those the people who should decide?
And given the number that they are given, they did.
So why do the national politicians, our delegation, say, oh, that's a horrible move.
It's the blame game. Yeah, if this was 2,000 troops and New York or
New York Senator do the same
Massachusetts,
thing, right?
You wouldn't hear from, you know, our delegation. This
You'd
is,
hear from the, Massachusetts this
is,
delegation,
right? This
right?
is going to have a huge economic impact on Anchorage. That's why you hear from the delegation. Mayor Berkowitz is very concerned about it. Governor Walker is very concerned about it. They're hoping that because they left the door open, they are reducing one of the brigades by two-thirds. So the theory is, well, there'll still be the elements of a brigade. Maybe they can convince them to keep more people. But the fact is, the Pentagon has less money. They have less money because of what's going on in Congress with the Republicans.
Okay. So here's the other part.
If the Republican Congress wanted no troop reduction, they could appropriate money.
Right.
They
right.
have the purse strings.
Sure, sure.
Right?
Okay. So, and then the other part about it that I want to get out is the blame game, blaming the president, and whether it be President Obama, President Bush. If the Congress makes these cuts and there's a Republican president and he signs that budget, what do you think the backlash is? Do you think it's different than from when Obama's going to be in there? I mean, it's his last couple of years. I mean, do you think he's just an easy target? He's such an easy thing to just slough everything that bad happens. You just say, oh,
well,
Obama.
It's a blame game. Yeah. So, you know, he's a target. They can blame him for this. They can blame him for that. The fact is, if you believe in personal responsibility, as some elected officials claim to, they should admit that perhaps they had some responsibility when they approved a budget deal that involves some restrictions, involves sequestration, and they're having trouble getting around it. I can't remember what it's called, but they came up with what some Republican senators called a gimmick on the Pentagon budget by putting $38 billion of a war budget, you know, in so they could claim that they did not exceed the budget caps. But that's what's happening. Every department is under budget caps. When we went to war in Iraq, I remember there were issues about some of the Humvees weren't armored. Some of the soldiers did not have personal armor, so that their families or friends were buying them armor. So they were under-equipped. So if you want not only a well-trained but well-equipped armed force, which we need, obviously, and you only give so much money to do whatever,
gonna,
but yes, you let the, you let the generals.
That, I thought you were going to finish that sentence with vote Democrat. That sounded like a commercial right there. That was like a third.
Well, I think if you want
that
a strong,
was like soft money commercial right, right. there. They should have recorded that.
Okay.
And get it to your pack, and
we
should use that.
Bob Pack, yeah. Bob Pack will use that. Thank you.
It's okay. About quarter till.
What's next? Have we?
I think we've moved on to the recording office. You know, the local recorder's office is closed. The budget cuts in Juneau, and I wanted to talk about this because that thing has been kind of opened and closed. It's kind of one of the first casualties of budgets. It's one of the offices that kind of got shut down back in the 90s when we had that budget cuts. But here's what caught my eye. I was listening to or looking at the agenda for the borough and listening to a story again on KRBD, of course. And they were talking about the recorder's office has been funded by the state for years and years and years. And they record property deeds and changing hands. And they do all that sort of stuff, right?
Lots of legal documents. Yeah.
All sorts of legal documents and stuff.
Especially for property transactions.
Right, especially. And historically, it's been, I mean, frankly, the people who lobby for the recorder's office are the real estate people. It's the real estate. Because they do so much of the transaction. They do the bulk of, they have to do all of their stuff through the recorder's office. So whenever there's transactions and such like that. So the state says we're going to shut down these recorder's offices, and they're doing it statewide in more remote areas, and they're consolidating them. Now, in Southeast, you have to deal with Juneau, which means if you have to file papers, either you do it digitally, which has always been like the dream of to do things digitally because you don't have to be there. You can just send an email or an image or text or whatever. Or you send it in the mail, and it's not as convenient for folks here. So the borough steps up. That's what I heard on the radio anyway. The borough steps up and says, we will do the functions, and our borough planning department will absorb it with no increase in costs because we can just fit it into our daily routine, which is really cool. I don't know what a recorder's office does. But it kind of made me think about what's going to be happening, because the state of Alaska is going to be cutting back on programs left and right. This was the first round. Next year, do you expect budget cuts next year?
Oh, right, absolutely. Yeah. Unless, you know, there's a Mideast war and oil goes up.
Unless that guy...
to 120.
Yeah, unless that guy you were talking about last week who could predict oil prices says the prices are going to go up.
No.
Whichever guy, I forgot what his name was.
I said they're not going to go up.
I've got to find that guy.
But...
So, as more things close, does the borough start looking at every program that gets shut down to see if we can pick it up locally? And what happens to the recorder's office in 2 years when three more important things, because the most important things are going to get cut later in the budget in the state, we're going to be making decisions. So we're taking on, you know, even the less popular programs early. It's kind of going to be a mess,
well,
don't you think?
Yeah. I mean, it's clear that services are going to be reduced. People in local communities are going to be faced with, do you want to keep a service formerly funded by the state or partially funded by the state going, and are you willing to pay for it? And if you say yes, as the borough apparently did for the recorder's mm-hmm. office. And I think I heard or read that there are some fees that they'll be collecting. So it's not
sure. No,
I don't know if that covers the cost. I haven't really, you know, looked at the issue.
Right.
But the overall point you're making is great. You know, we've relied on the federal government and the state government to do a lot of things. We don't have, you know, a state, you know, that T word, you know, et cetera. And
they just signed the first statewide tax increase a couple of weeks ago. We didn't talk about it. The gas tax increase.
Right, yeah.
Which is a statewide that will impact every single one of us
right.
in some way. It's a gas.
Yeah, so gas. It's a good question, and it's something that local governments and citizens will have to ask themselves. Is this service so critical that we're willing to absorb it and pay for it ourselves, or is it time to say goodbye, even though we love it? I mean, that's, you know, I was faced with that decision as yeah. a school superintendent when the logging industry went downhill and our budget was cut dramatically and some programs that were near and dear to my heart went bye-bye. And I recommended that they go bye-bye. I mean, it's a tough but necessary thing. And we're in a fiscal climate now, obviously, where there's going to be another year or two or three of huge deficits. I mean, even if oil comes up, production is going down, despite what's his name, that guy you supported for governor, Parnell, you know, predicted with...
I didn't support anybody for governor.
With SB 21, production's going down. It's not, you know, there hasn't been a dramatic increase. And, you know, the fact is the state will have less revenue. And that's a... It will be a huge, all-consuming issue.
Well, it is interesting because this is the first time that we've seen a program that had been run by the state. And the fact is the service will still be – will. This is what gets me a little bit. The service will still be done by the state. It's going to take a little bit more time. And the borough planning office saying we can absorb the duties into our current schedule. We're not going to hire anybody else new. We're not going to work any overtime. It's just going to be part of our daily routine. So then you question, well,
how do you get the hours to do that? Or may
I mean, it comes down to hours in a day for each employee, because you have to analyze that when you're doing budgets for governments. Where did the hours come from?
Right.
And then you say, well, if they have 14 hours a week to do this, what were they doing last week? What were those 14? I mean, you have to ask those questions
right.
if you're going to be a sitting person on a government like that. A lot of questions. And then, as you said, it's not going to cost anymore because there's not going to be any more people hired. And the duties are going to be absorbed. So then the fees, the fee schedule, you know, where does that go? Is it making money for the borough now? Are they going to make money?
Not knowing what the volume of recording is, I doubt if it's going to be a huge revenue generator. But
no, probably
why don't we
not.
Get into this brings up another subject that was just in the paper. That's the cigarette tax.
Oh,
what do you think about
one.
That,
yeah.
Kyle?
Well, I mean, it's a sin tax. They're the easiest, most popular things to get through. Sin taxes, you know, I mean, I don't know. I'm not big on taxing, but if you're going to tax something, I guess you might as well start with sin.
Well, your sins, not my sins.
No, I don't know. I mean, you know, the tobacco taxes at the statewide level are targeted towards education to stop smoking. I think that's good, and it's really worked. I mean, it's been a successful program. Again, I think we talked about this last time. I don't know where the money goes. If it goes just to the general fund and it goes into increases for this or right. or it's misspent for that, then I have a problem.
Yeah, and that's a really good point. I mean, just, you know, I'm a non-smoker, and yeah. I'm the type of person who believes there shouldn't be smoking in any public places whatsoever, blah, blah, blah. I know different people, including smokers, disagree with that.
Sure.
But having said that, from a tax point of view, and maybe you hit it on the head, if this is a social tax, if you will, and if that's the motivation, okay, if you agree with that. My view on taxes is you raise taxes if you need to. So I don't know, and I haven't right. watched or attended assembly meetings. They may have had all this discussion, and but so we know that part of the motivation is the social tax thing. There's a belief it might reduce smoking, especially among teens. But is there also a revenue? Does somebody want? Is this being done also to generate revenue?
Yes.
And if so, for what? Or if it's simply only the social tax and it's going to generate a bunch of money, I think it's incumbent upon local government to consider lowering the property tax by a similar amount.
Yeah.
You know, but I don't know. I suspect the assemblies had that discussion. I don't know what purposes they have discussed assigning. You know, it's $1 million a year, apparently.
So basically what you're saying is if governments find ways to save money or find ways to get revenue streams like that, that should reduce the tax impact on the general fund,
okay.
basically.
For example, if education funding was cut by $1 million, and meanwhile the cigarette tax was going and it was also $1 million, and mm-hmm. the assembly said, well, we're going to use that to replace the last state funding, that's one thing. But if, you know, I think there has to be, and again, I want to say that the borough assembly may have already, and I expect, had this discussion, what will the money be used for? The city will get a share for of that, is my understanding. Mm-hmm. What's the city's plan to use it? Is it,
yeah, be interesting
is it targeted to substance abuse, or... not to be critical, is it just so the city and borough can have more big government and they'll use it to increase the cost of government? So,
well, that's
so
what happens, and this is what I'm talking about.
Certainly that discussion needs to happen if it hasn't. And, right. You know, I think through the ordinance process, my understanding, all they did is give direction to have an ordinance come back, which means there'll be at least two readings.
I'd like to place a wager.
So I think that people will... talk about that, and they should. What are we going to use the money for? And again, right. is it targeted or is it just more
sure. yeah, it's a good
slop
question.
For government to spend any way they wish to? And
I'd like to know about the recorder's office just for a quick second. Do you think I want to put a little bet? I'll bet you a cup of coffee that within a year there's a request to add a position to the recorder to the planning department.
You know, very well could
this
be.
This is how government grows. It gets a program into a place and says, we can handle it. And then the next time around, it says, you know what, we need to get an admin assistant.
Right, or you bring in a temporary, yep. and down the road, he or
and
she
then pretty
is
soon
a
you've
permanent
got
employee. Yep.
Nine people instead of seven. And who's going to pay for it?
Yeah. Well, you know, there's certainly going to be financial pressure on local government due to the state's fiscal situation. I'm surprised revenue sharing didn't go away completely this year. I'm not advocating that it should have, but that's an easy target for state legislators.
It's going to go away.
If you don't have revenue, why are we sharing whatever it is, 50, 60 million with communities around the state? It used to be a lot more than that. It used to be a couple hundred million.
And it was completely taken away for a couple of years in the late 90s. I believe, and then reinstated again. So it's one of those things that's early on the chopping block next year, revenue sharing. I mean, that's just basically a check to municipalities. So it's going to get worse. This is just the first example, and I thought it was interesting to talk about it because people are going to have to, you know, a lot of people have things that they work with. They have programs, this one particular to the real estate agencies.
Yeah, and I assume real estate folks and or attorneys who deal with those transactions had communications with
the
borough
about no doubt
how this was an important function
Absolutely.
To keep.
And they convinced them, and they, good for them. Yeah. It's not being critical. It's just right. that these decisions are going to be made. And folks need to be aware of that, and, you know, time will tell. Because in 3 or 4 years, when you have 2 or 3 of these that are going to be now competing at the borough level, in 3 years, it's not going to be the recorder's office saying, hey, you're still going to keep doing this in the planning department. It's going to be the recorder's office. There's going to be another interest group that's going to be down here. They're all going to be competing for the same dollar. And,
At the rate the legislature's going, you know, so in order to maintain their...
Here it comes. Glass Palace.
They get thousands of dollars in at the federal per diem rate while they live at home during special session in Anchorage and Matsu. But I won't be surprised to see if they say, okay, Southeast, hey, you like ferries. Do you want them?
Hey, you know what?
You know what?
We've got 3 votes in the Southeast Caucus that could cut a deal and get to the CBR. We have 3 members. The only other members of that minority are downtown Anchorage Democrats and 1 downtown Fairbanks Democrat.
The ferry system took it on the chin.
They could break
it off. I think they'll continue to, you know, they still have.
Let's get Ortez on here.
How much money is stashed away for the Juneau Access Road?
Let's get Ortez on here.
The federal funding was stripped out of that project. It's a $1 billion project. There's probably 40, 50, 60 million in state funds that weren't touched. For political reasons.
Could have
been used for the Marine Highway System.
Do you think
system,
it would be nice to invite the distinguished representative Ortez to come on one of these days? When you get back from your vacation?
Yeah, perhaps. Yeah, we'll
that see. Might be fun. We tried to get Billy on here. But, okay.
So I want you both to know we have about 2 minutes left.
Yes.
So if you would like to take a minute each and do a wind-up or... anything we've learned here this evening satisfied our curiosity about?
I think Bob is delusional in thinking that Donald Trump is really a candidate. I think he's just making fun. And he knows it's going to be Jeb exclamation point versus Hillary. Clinton Bush, round 2, right?
I wouldn't bet money on that, especially Jeb Bush. I think Hillary Clinton has a greater chance of getting the nomination than Jeb Bush does. I mean,
that's what
Jeb Bush could even give answers on the Iraq War. He had to think about it for 5 days. There was press release after press release about what he really thought about his brother starting a war on false pretenses. His brother knew there weren't any WMDs, but there were.
That's a different story.
And we put the war on a credit card.
I appreciate the fact that our listeners called in and had some really good questions, some good points. I think that was good.
Well, I just want to say, go Donald Trump.
And I want to thank both of you for being here this evening. You know, this is our second installment. It is a pilot program. We're trying to work out a schedule, an evening where it's most convenient for everyone, whether we're going to do it once a week, whether we're going to do it every other week. And we will keep you informed as we go along and work this all out. But I would certainly like to thank both of you for coming in and making this an interesting hour for our listeners. And thank you, listeners, who called in with your questions. And stay tuned. We'll let you know when we're back on the air.
Thanks,
everyone. Good night.
Thank you.